run a digital marketing agency by the name of Find and Convert, and we serve mostly a B2B client. I also have a podcast that's called The Social Business Engine, where we're over 100 episodes, and we feature brands, and we talk about how those brands are using social media strategically within their business. I've written one book. I enjoy speaking. I blog a lot. I just recently launched a Periscope called Poolside Sales Chat on Friday afternoons at 3:15, where we talk about social selling and sales strategies. And again, I do it by my pool in my home in Florida. So tune into that. We also have that online as well. And I'm part of the influencer program at both Dell and IBM. And also in my local community in Tampa Bay, I'm the Vice President of Communications for the American Marketing Association Tampa Bay chapter, which sometimes feels like a full-time job for those of you that perhaps have participated in a volunteer event like that. So what I want to cover with you today is what I have characterized as a three-layer framework for organization-wide marketing. And I'm going to explain what that is and really the rationale, like why I think that's important. I'm going to show you examples of this cross-functional marketing in action. So this is not just a lot of theory, but I'm going to show you a lot of really cool examples. And then we'll review some success factors. Now, I want to first share with you that I actually approach this from three lenses. So my perspective on this is from three lenses. So let me share what those lenses are. First, it's my corporate experience. I spent about 20 years or so in different positions in different corporations here in the U.S. And then more recently, the last 10 years or so, I've been running my own agency. So I've had the privilege of working with well over 100 brands and really understanding what their challenges are. So I've really seen this challenge firsthand, as well as the solution that I'm going to reveal to you. And then also I have the privilege of interviewing people on my podcast, as I mentioned just a moment ago, where we've published over 100 podcasts where we interview mostly mid and large brands, household names like SAP, Walmart, IBM, Dell, as well as some other companies that perhaps are not household names, but they're all doing cross-functional marketing and social media marketing very strategically. So these are the three lenses that I really have come to look at this issue with and have also seen how to address the issue. And really the issue is this. Marketing as an industry, marketing as a function inside of a business is undergoing a transformation. And here's the problem. Here's the reason that the transformation is happening. The way that the marketing department has been structured over the last several years doesn't work anymore. The deck is stacked against that traditional marketing department. And the reason, there's lots of reasons for it. Certainly one reason is that the CEO, the executives, they want a measurable return on marketing dollars, right? I see heads nodding. Anybody that is in a marketing responsibility, especially in a management marketing responsibility, you understand that point. CEOs, the C-suite wants a return on their marketing dollar. But here's another challenge that we all face. In years past, the way marketing was done was the brand did all the marketing out from the logo and pushed it out. Well, we're now living in this digital age, which is very mainstream. And what do with each other online? We engage with each other, person to person, human to human. So that's changed the behavior of our customer, the consumer, and consequently, it's changed the behavior and the mindset of the consumer so that the consumer no longer wants to be marketed to from a logo. They want to engage with people. So that's why the marketing department, when you look at the traditional marketing department, it's set up to fail out of the gate unless you approach what I'm going to share with you here today. And I'd love to hear examples where you may be doing this. And I also want to announce something here. The 2 o'clock session is canceled because unfortunately that speaker couldn't make it. So I have permission to stay in this room with any one of you who just would want to continue this conversation. I'll come off the stage, we'll sit down around a few tables, and we can just continue the conversation because the 2 o'clock session is canceled. So anybody who's interested in that, that's an open invitation. So what I'm really referring to is that marketing isn't something that should be relegated to be responsible by one department that we call marketing. It's just not practical anymore. So what I'm really referring to is this concept of cross-functional marketing. It's the notion that marketing needs to be done with the cooperation, with the collaboration, with the proactive participation of the people across the different departments within any company. So what I want to do now is I want to share with you what I call the three-layer framework to cross-functional marketing. However, I really thought that calling it a three-layer framework was kind of boring. So I came up with a metaphor. Who doesn't like an ice cream sandwich? So the metaphor here is that the ice cream sandwich approach to cross-functional marketing looks like this. On the outer layers, you've got storytelling. Because fundamentally, most of what we do in marketing is telling a story. Are you all telling stories in your marketing? I mean, that's how the consumer wants to be engaged, through stories. So the top layer is storytelling. I'm going to skip over the middle layer for just a moment and just say that the other outer layer is the marketing function, the marketing department, the people who are in the marketing department. They are the people that actually have to make this happen. Now, the biggest layer that you see there is what I'm calling cross-functional, and it's basically all of the employees across the business that do the work of the business, that deliver the products and the services of that business on a daily basis. Now, let's face it, depending on the industry, but in most industries, I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that in most industries, the domain expertise within that organization is not in the marketing department. The domain expertise is out in the employees, right? I mean, when I go to Starbucks and get a cup of coffee, the barista behind the counter is expert on that coffee, probably more so than the people in the marketing department. So the idea here basically is to tap into the people in these different areas of the business. So I want to look at each one, and first we'll start with storytelling. Storytelling has to have three elements to it. It needs to be authentic, it needs to be relevant, and it needs to be actionable. So what I want to do is I want to give you, as I said earlier in my introduction, some real-world examples. So this whole three-layer framework, whether or not these companies call it the ice cream sandwich approach, is being deployed in a lot of organizations. So here's the first example of a company that's doing authentic storytelling. The company is Avery Dennison. Anybody know who Avery Dennison is? Okay, one of you. They're not a B2C brand, right? They make industrial adhesives, or as they like to say, industrial sticky stuff, right? Global company, 25,000 employees. A couple of years ago, they launched a program called Get Social. Now, within the organization, they're calling it a movement, because what they're doing is they are empowering employees to share the stories that they have on a day-to-day basis, just based on what they're doing in their local markets. Because remember, 25,000 employees across the globe. And what they do is they provide them a place online, sort of an intranet online hub, where they can just go in there and type up an experience that they had in their marketplace. They don't have to worry about grammar. They don't have to worry about it being, you know, dramatic or any of the things that we care about from a journalistic standpoint. All they have to do, or all they are encouraged to do, because they don't have to do it, they're encouraged to go in to this online hub and just share experiences. Then what the content marketing people do is they take that information and they repurpose it and they turn that into content that then is shareable. And the person who submitted that story gets the full credit. They're bylined, their picture's on it, they're the ones who are actually the authors of that story. So when that story goes out and it's shared on social media, that the employee that submitted it is getting full credit, and anybody that's consuming that content is not engaging with a logo, they're engaging with a real person in a real location around a real authentic story. So that's one example of authentic stories. An example of relevant stories is 3M. Most of us know who 3M is, and in most cases, most of us know 3M because we use their little sticky notes. Right? We all use those little sticky notes, right? Well, in reality, it's a little tiny, tiny sliver of their business. They're an 89,000-person company. They're in multiple industries, from aeronautics to healthcare to, just lots of different B2B industries. And honestly, their story is pretty much ditto to what I just explained with Avery Dennison. They're doing the same thing. They're empowering their employees to share their experiences for the very same reason. So I won't spend any more time on it, because really What I just told you with Avery Dennison is exactly what 3M is doing. The main difference that I do want to say here is that, notice in the top bullet there, the relevance to them is that their branding is all around science applied to life, because they are a company largely made up of scientists. So they are encouraging those scientists to just share their experiences and make it easy for them to publish it. Cisco is yet another big company. Notice the first three companies I've shared with you are big companies, but don't worry, I've got a small company to share with you a little bit later. Cisco, 70,000 employees. They actually have a newsroom that they call The Network. And the newsroom is exactly that, right? You've all seen a newsroom on television. You know what a newsroom looks like. You probably have a good idea of the roles inside of a newsroom, right? You've got the anchors, and you've got producers, and you've got a whole bunch of people running around that actually have to create the stories and get the story on air. Well, Cisco has a newsroom called The Network, and they're doing exactly that, except instead of live television, they're publishing all that content through a variety of digital channels and a variety of social media channels, and almost all of that content is coming from who? Employees. Okay? So again, just another example of cross-functional marketing, because they're tapping into their 70,000 employees across all aspects of their business and tapping into those experiences and, of course, into their expertise. And then, of course, those employees are being branded by those employees, you know, being showcased. So again, the ice cream sandwich approach, starting with a storytelling mindset, a storytelling strategy, tapping into the employees across the business. And so let's look at the role of the employees. I mentioned earlier the barista at Starbucks, just as an example. So regardless of the industry, whether it's a B2C industry like retail or B2B like engineering or science like 3M, the employees, and let's take 3M for example, where largely their employee population is made up of scientists. Remember I said earlier that in most industries, the marketing department doesn't have the domain expertise, right? If you're a company that's made up of 89,000 employees, most of whom, many of whom, a large percentage of whom are scientists, the marketing staff doesn't have that domain expertise. So this concept of the employees rule, they're the ones that have all the storytelling potential. So it's the role of marketing to recognize that and then put a framework like this in place to harness that. So here's an interesting data point. Once a year, Edelman puts out this report that they call the Trust Barometer. And year after year, what we've been seeing is that employees are the ones that have the most credibility in the eyes of the consumer, the employee. So remember what I said just a few minutes ago, that in years past, marketing was done from the brand, from the logo, pushing messages out, advertising, heavy, and it all came from the brand. But because we're in the digital age and we now are accustomed as a natural way of communicating day in and day out, human to human, the same paradigm, the same mindset shift transfers over to the way that consumers want to engage with a brand and the way that we as brands need to engage with the consumer. And Edelman validates that. Now, there's an interesting data point that's in this report, and there's a link to it. So all the slides from all the presentations are available to you, so you can, you know, go see the report. And one of the data points is that employees are trusted more than the CEO. However, the good news is the CEO is moving up in credibility from last year. So now let's look at the role of the marketing department. The marketing department's job, essentially, is to harness the storytelling potential of its employees. Let's face it, these employees, these scientists at 3M, when they got hired, I doubt that in the interview they were asked, so, tell me about your storytelling skills. Let's talk about the PhD from Harvard I have, because I don't know how to do storytelling, right? So employees were not hired to do storytelling. So it's the marketing department's job to harness all that storytelling potential that exists. So there's some skills that are needed by the marketing department. The first one is what I call quant, meaning quantitative, technical skills. And that is the marketing department needs to define who's the target customer, what's their persona, what are the things that the customer cares most about, What's the total size of that universe? Where do they spend time? What do they read? What events do they go to? What are the specific pain points? All the things that the marketing department has traditionally done, that hasn't changed. But it needs to be done very quantitatively so that when we harness the storytelling potential, we can have the right messaging, the right keywords in there, and we know how to target it out to reach that consumer. But we also need creative skills, right? Again, the point is that the employee was not hired to do storytelling. And when they submit a story, we don't want to put the pressure on the employee to write a story that's grammatically beautiful and, you know, all the proper punctuation is there, et cetera, et cetera. It's the marketing department's job to take that input and add the creative element to it that's needed, both visually and even the way it's formatted. Now, here's another interesting skill set that I think marketing department needs to have. And this is more true in larger companies, but it can even be true in a 100-person company. And that's what I call networking. So, you know, imagine you're at an event. It can be an industry event or it could be a company event, and you're talking to employees. So the marketing team should be looking for storytelling potential employees simply by asking the same question over and over again. What do you do? You know, what's your experience with your customers? And have a series of questions that you're asking over and over again, and then seeing which employees actually have really great storytelling potential. And then also that networking in a bigger company, it's probably less realistic to do it in person, because if you work for one of these bigger companies with thousands of employees spread across, you know, all over North America and beyond, then you need some kind of an internal employee social network. The acronym for that is ESN. Basically, an ESN is kind of a hybrid of LinkedIn and Facebook, except it's internal and it's typically licensed on an ESN vendor's platform. And an ESN, an enterprise social network, is exactly that. It's a place where employees can actually collaborate with each other on projects, find skills that are needed, and just network with each other inside the organization. So tapping into that is also a way to do some networking. Now, the other role is detective. You know, sometimes the marketing department needs to ask the right questions. Again, an employee might be asked, you know, so tell me about your last customer experience. Well, I went out to this client's site and we implemented the software in a week. Well, you have to ask more questions to get the story out of them, right? Because they may not be a storyteller naturally. So you've got to have that detective role. And then, of course, last, and I've alluded to this many times already, another role for the marketer is to be a journalist, right? To take all that input that comes from the employee and then convert it, create something from it, and also something that could be multi-purposed. So these are the general skills that are needed by the marketing department. So I want to give you a few more examples. This first one here is Dell. I mentioned earlier that I've got even more big company examples, and then I've got a smaller company that I'm going to share with you. So Dell is an interesting one because, first of all, they're about 30 years old. They're 110,000 employees. And they're about to get bigger because they're doing an acquisition which hasn't closed yet, but it looks like it's going to close, and that's going to add about 50,000 people to their headcount. But what they've been doing for about the last 5 years is they have been actively and proactively training employees across many different functions on how to identify when there's a story opportunity and how to actually engage in social media. So they take it beyond the example that I shared with you of Avery Dennison and 3M. They're actually empowering employees to share their stories through social media. Now, they do this by putting them through a formal training program. And the training program, they call that Social Media and Community University. And the university part is serious. It is literally a university inside of Dell devoted to the art and science of engaging with social media for storytelling, for business purposes, to advance the business. Someone who goes through the SMACU curriculum, that's what they call it, SMACU, see? I'm not making that up. I can't make up that stuff. So someone who goes through the SMACU curriculum at Dell, when they go back, and it's not like a month-long course, it's typically done, you know, a few days here, a few days there. When they go back to their job, so to speak, their manager is given a report on their accomplishments in the program, how they engaged, you know, where they excel, where they need a little coaching, that kind of thing. And then their manager is held accountable to actually work with their employee on these new skills and put them to use. And then, you ready for this? Remember one of my first slides, I talked about how the C-suite is demanding ROI for marketing? So in addition to the manager being responsible for coaching the employee who comes out of a SmackU training program, they're also accountable for finding return on investment. They're accountable for actually finding ways that that employee has put their skills to use in a way that is actually driving business value for Dell. Now, I have to say, Dell is one of the few companies that is this far along. Is anybody else, anybody in this room this far along? Nobody, right? They're pretty far along. One reason is that their CEO, Michael Dell, he gets it. You know, he himself is socially active. Like, if you go to his Twitter account, he's the one tweeting. It's not his executive assistant. It's not an agency. It's him. And this is a CEO of a Fortune 50 company. So he understands the value of being harnessing social technologies for human engagement, human interaction. So this is a great example. There's a lot of case studies out there, including I did a podcast with the woman that runs the SmackU program at Dell. So her name is Amy Heiss. So if you go to my website for my podcast, socialbusinessengine.com, I don't remember the episode number, but if you do a search for either Dell or Amy Heiss, you'll find that episode. All right, here's another big brand. And what Humana is doing is they have about 50,000 employees. And if I'm not mistaken, they're going through a merger or acquisition, and they're about to also probably double. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But it's going to be significant. And what they've been doing is they have implemented one of these ESNs that I mentioned earlier, an enterprise social network. And they implemented this about 4 or 5 years ago. And what the enterprise social network is, which, by the way, they call it Buzz, and they give everybody the opportunity to enroll in Buzz and use Buzz. But it's not a requirement. It is not an employee requirement, but they encourage it. They invite all employees to enroll and use it. They have a relatively easy, small training program. And then they're encouraged to use the ESN to network with each other. And what the marketing team does is they're watching, they're listening, and they're looking for opportunities to capture those stories and then do what the marketing department does, share those stories. Okay, so I promise a smaller company, I'm going to give you a two-for-one. This is a twofer. They're a smaller company. They're about 500 employees. But the reason it's a two-for-one is this is the unsexiest company with the unsexiest product on the planet. They manufacture industrial solder paste. Now, and to just I want you to visualize how you use industrial solder paste. We probably all have their product in either a laptop or, this here, right? Because there's circuitry on here, and circuit boards have to be soldered on. Even the cars we drive, modern cars, have circuit boards. All those circuits have to be soldered on, and they have to be soldered on with a paste. And apparently, and I'm going to tell you as much as I know about industrial solder paste in this next statement. These solder paste come in different chemical compositions. That's as much as I know. But they are made up of, remember I said there are about 500 employees? They're about 95%, if not 99%, engineers. Probably many of them, if not all of them, chemical engineers. And many of them are PhDs. And so a few years ago, actually more than a few years ago, almost 10 years ago, they were very early adopters. They did something radical. Really radical. They allow their engineers to start blogging. Remember that quant skill I told you about earlier? They had a list of keywords, and the marketing team turned to the engineers and said, would you like to write about your area of expertise? All I need you to do is pick a keyword from this list here, right? Here's a list of keywords. Pick a keyword and then write a technical article. And your audience is the engineer that is a buyer of ours. And then we're going to publish that as blog content. We're not asking you to sell anything. We don't want you to market anything. We don't want you to pitch anything. We want you to write technical articles. And I kid you not, if you pull up one of these articles, it is insomnia material. I mean, if you're not a chemical engineer reading it, it's insomnia material, okay? Very niche content, very long-tail content, but it's been wildly successful for them. In this example here, what do you see here? Besides, you know, you can kind of begin to see the article a little bit here, but that's beside the point, right? You see the picture. We see the human element here, the picture of the engineer. You see her full name. You see her phone number. That is unheard of, right? Can you imagine a CEO saying, I don't want my engineers on the website with their phone number and an email address? They're going to get recruited. Well, you know what really happens? Just the opposite. The loyalty that they have developed, the bond that they have developed with their company because they are given this opportunity to create content, to do this storytelling. But in their case, the storytelling is about really technical topics. You know that Edelman Trust Barometer that I mentioned earlier? One of the things that's in that report is that the employees that are most credible in the eyes of the consumer are employees that have technical expertise. Now that's a broad stroke, right? Technical expertise can mean a lot of things. But what it really means is, I kind of prefer the phrase domain expertise, meaning that, like I said earlier, the barista at Starbucks, if I ask a question about a specific bean and he or she gives me a 5-minute dissertation on that bean, that is technical expertise. And that is far more credible than something that, you know, might have come out of the marketing department at Starbucks, because that barista gave me that information. Right? That's what Indium is doing, and this has been wildly successful for them. As I said, they started this about 10 years ago in the very, very, very early days of what we now call content marketing, what we now call digital marketing, what we now call social networking. So great example. I encourage you to check that out. Even though it is potentially insomnia material, it is, however, potentially a case study that you can bring back to the office. Because, you know, obviously in a room with this many people, there's probably different industries represented here, right? Anybody in what they would call, hope I don't offend anyone here, a boring industry. Yeah, I mean, if you're not Nike or Disney, you know, you're B2B, you know, niche, then, you know, we can raise our hand and say, yeah, it's a boring industry, you know? So, I mean, you know what I mean? You get the idea. So this is a great case study for those boring industry people. All right, this is another example. I love this example. NASA. Now, here's what I love about NASA. First of all, they're a government organization. NASA.gov, federal government organization, right? Yet, they behave like a brand. I mean, in recent years, they didn't always behave like a brand, but now they behave like a brand. They have, anybody want to guess how many social media channels NASA has? 20? 500? You listen to my podcast, Dan. You know that. You cheated. Dan's been on my podcast. So they have over 500 social media accounts. Now, the reason for that is NASA has so many different programs going on. NASA is alive and well, by the way. They're thriving. They're just kind of pivoting in the role that they play in the world of aeronautics. So over the last 5 years, give or take, these different programs that are out there by NASA, the people that are running those programs have been empowered to do the storytelling. So not only are they empowered to do the storytelling, they've also been empowered to run the social media accounts. Now, they work closely with a communications team, and under the communications team are people that are responsible for the social media strategy at NASA. But they're not responsible for the day-to-day posting and tweeting and all of that for these 500 social media accounts. They're like a communications and governance team that makes sure that all the 500 accounts are, you know, doing what they should be doing as well as not doing what they shouldn't be doing, right? So the storytelling, this is an example here in this picture here of, I think that's an astronaut, if I remember correctly. And they're doing a community event. The people in that event are the general public. They start tweeting out, hey, on April 29th at 10 a.m., we're having this, you know, get together. The public's welcome. so-and-so astronaut's going to be there to talk about his upcoming mission or his previous mission or whatever, right? The public just shows up, and what do? They take a bunch of pictures, they record it, it's all permissible. NASA is doing that for storytelling purposes. So in their case, they're not only empowering their employees, they're empowering their fans. And their fans are all of us. Now, I'm going to digress here for just a moment, a quick little tangent, really interesting stuff. You know, as marketers, we're all taught by good logic that we need to have a clear definition of our target audience, right? Well, NASA's target audience is all of humanity. And the reason for that is because once you learn, like, what they do, the business they're in, aeronautics, what they do affects every human being on the planet. Think about it. We all use GPS, right? How is that enabled? Satellites. So, I mean, just one example, right? So, but anyway, it's a great example of a brand, in this case, a government agency, that is doing a phenomenal job of storytelling. So let's run through a few success factors, and then we'll wrap it up and open up for some Q&A. So at some level, there needs to be training. What that looks like at every company is unique. But there needs to be some kind of training. So like the NASA example that I just shared with you, you know, they have to train the people out in the different programs, you know, what kind of stories they should be telling, and just give them the guidelines or guardrails. I like the phrase guardrails because this way they tell them, you know, like, if you go outside this guardrail, you know, that's dangerous, but stay within these guardrails and you're fine. So that takes some kind of training. Every story should be actionable. At the end of a story, it should leave the consumer, now I'm using the word consumer intentionally here, because not every story is written. It could be audio, it could be video. So I don't want to say every time someone reads a story, because it's not always written, right? It might be video. But every story, at the end of the story, it should leave the consumer of that story with a desire to do something. And remember that we have to understand the customer's journey. So if we understand the customer's journey, which is part of the quant skills in marketing, then we know a particular story that we're publishing, we know what kind of an action makes sense to deliver, right? And in many, many cases, it's not going to be a buy now or a coupon or sign up for my demo. In many cases, it's just part of the journey. And you have to organize within the context of your strategy what is actionable. But the point is, every story should leave that consumer wanting to take some action. I think this is huge, and this is really more of a mindset thing. The mindset is that my whole presentation here has been about this one statement right here, that marketing isn't something that is done by just one department. And if you can impact the mindset within your organization with this mindset, that marketing is not one department, and you can get the buy-in, because it takes buy-in, to go cross-functional. You can beg, borrow, and steal my ice cream sandwich framework. It's out there in the public domain. And if you can take this mindset and permeate it across your organization, then you'll start to get some real traction on this. So essentially, this whole ice cream sandwich approach really is anchored in storytelling, anchored in the marketing department harnessing the storytelling potential from all the employees. And I call this a framework for cross-functional marketing. We looked at the skills that are needed, quant, Crayola. We also looked at detective skills, journalist skills. Storytelling needs to be authentic, relevant, and actionable. Remember, as I said, employees have the best stories. They're the ones with the domain expertise. And then from a success factor standpoint, there's got to be some kind of training involved. You want to make stories actionable, and you want to have the mindset that marketing is not one department. So I'm going to open it up for Q&A. This is my contact information if you'd like to just continue this conversation. There's a couple of ways to continue this conversation. Here's my contact information, ways that you can just get in touch with me. But also, we've got some time here. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes before this session wraps up. And then we also can stay in here for the 2 o'clock session for anybody that's interested in continuing the conversation. Since I don't see any hands up just yet, I want to ask you all a question. Does anybody who's willing to share have any of this in place in their business today? You do? Are you willing to elaborate? Absolutely, yeah. So the way that I've seen it work, because that's a really common challenge, is kind of getting it off the ground, getting employees to actually engage and participate, is remember that networking skill? So a part of that networking skill is literally approaching people selectively and working with them one-on-one, coaching them, doing everything within your ability, your power, to make sure they understand what we're trying to accomplish, because sometimes they don't understand. Sometimes they think you're trying to sort of leverage them, use them for marketing. You know, we really just want to capture, you know, your expertise and share it. And then also, here's a key point. Make sure that you cover the WIFM. You know what the WIFM analogy or acronym is? What's in it for me, okay? But instead of me, it's what's in it for them, right? So you cover that with them. Well, what's in it for them is it helps them to build their brand. It helps them to get some exposure and some visibility within the industry. It's simply good for their career. It can go on their resume. It can go on their LinkedIn profile, you know? And so there's value to the employee as well. So net, approach people selectively, privately, and then also ask if they are willing to share their experience with other employees, if they're willing to encourage other employees. You know, so in the beginning, it's a little bit of a grassroots effort. The Indium story that I shared with you, you know, the solder paste people, it started that way. They started with one engineer who was reluctant, and then they went to like three engineers, and then they kind of hockey sticked up to about 12, right? And then from 12, they hockey sticked up to about 50, and then they went to about 70, and I think they're still at about 70 engineers that are consistently blogging. So it takes time and effort.
Can I give an example of that, Bernie?
Yeah, Jim.
16 years ago, when I worked at the Tribune Company, Tim Knight.
Yeah, and if you actually start to weave it into performance reviews and bonuses, you know, newsletter-style recognition, you know, town hall, you know, style recognition, that kind of thing, then other people start to see, like, oh, you know, I'm missing out on this. I really should get involved. Yeah. Other thoughts? We're right at 2 o'clock, so technically this session is over now. I'm here through tomorrow. This room is available, so the speaker is no longer available for what was scheduled here. I'm going to hang around. Anybody that wants to hang around, we'll just sit around and just continue the conversation. Thank you very much for your attention.